This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, host of HomebrewCon Online, a virtual gathering of homebrewers happening this June 18th through the 20th. With an all-star lineup of speakers, HomebrewCon Online is an opportunity to enhance your brewing skills and knowledge, all from the comfort of your own home. Tune in for live seminars, demonstrations, virtual expos, meetups, and happy hours. Learn more and register at homebrewcon.org. That's homebrewcon.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 14th, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Jonathan Etley from National Chemicals talks about a set of principles of cleaning to give you a good start for sanitizing your gear. It's a follow-up on my conversation with Jonathan's boss, Merle Landman, from the Iodophore episode many years ago. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other basic brewing gear. I just got a brand new shipment of new logbooks. It's the same logbook, just more copies. So you guys keep buying them, so I keep getting them in stock. So check them out at basicbrewingshop.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. This past Monday, I released to the public our Basic Brewing video episode featuring my brown ale. But that's old news to financial supporters because you saw that last week, along with the bonus content and the recipe as well. And thanks to everybody who's part of the supporting team. You may have seen on Twitter and Instagram that I did something like a small batch Captinus using brew in a bag a few days ago. I used 2 pounds of Pilsner malt in a 1 gallon batch, or at least I intended it to be a 1 gallon batch. It came out a little less than that. I mashed as normal and then pulled my grain out and put it into a bread pan, roasting it for 3 hours at 375 degrees Fahrenheit or 190°C. And the top did get nice and brown, although the inside grain was not as toasty as I wanted or expected. I don't think I got as much caramelization as if I'd left more sugars in there. Anyway, the wort did darken when I put the grains back in the kettle, and I did a 30-minute boil with wort with hops while the grains were baking instead of doing the hop tea with water. Anyway, this is far from what Lars Maria Skarsgård described as a traditional technique, but it'll be fun to see what happens. And I did shoot video, so look for that on a future Basic Brewing video episode. Pass or fail, we'll do a show on it. Let's talk about our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. You know we love Imperial. They're the only certified organic yeast company. They have the highest pitch rate of any liquid yeast, 200 billion cells in those handy, easy-to-open packages. My stir plate is dusty because I don't make starters anymore for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches. And I've heard from several brewers with excellent Imperial stories, including JM on Patreon. JM says, I ordered a beer kit from the local brew shop and had them ship it to my house. It arrived on March 25th, but I didn't get around to brewing it until April 10th. Imagine my disappointment when I opened it up and discovered it had a liquid yeast packet from Imperial Dieter, that had been sitting at 70 degrees in my house the whole time, unrefrigerated. JM says, I made the batch with the yeast, but didn't expect it to work. Surprise, surprise, the next morning it was bubbling, slowly but steadily. 2 days later, it had all but stopped, and after 4 days, I got nervous and took a gravity reading. It came in at 10:04, so it took a licking and kept on ticking. Thanks for that story, JM. Now, I'm sure Imperial would not endorse this handling of their product. They recommend that it is refrigerated and stays refrigerated until pitching time. In fact, they package it very well to send to homebrew shops so that it stays cold. But their recommended shelf life is now 4 months when handled properly. So again, we love Imperial Organic Yeast. Check them out at imperialyeast.com and ask for them at your local homebrew store, Imperial Organic Yeast. I got an email update from Adam Ross, a brewer at Twin Span Brewing in Davenport, Iowa. You'll remember Adam from his defense of brown ale on this show a few weeks back. Adam says, we quietly opened our brewery yesterday, quietly in that we don't have a sign up on the building yet and construction isn't entirely finished, but we hung up a banner and made a post on Facebook that folks should stop by for to-go orders of food and beer. Adam says, we'll have a proper opening once lockdowns are lifted, all things considered. We have a decent number of customers yesterday, and feedback has been mostly positive. Adam says, of the five beers we had on tap, the brown, I've named Bambuco, and Adam sent a picture of it. It's a beautiful beer. It was third in sales for the day. The direct feedback from customers was that they really liked it. I think it was a bit undercarbonated, even for English palates, so I've been slowly bumping up the kegs. We're still figuring out our CO2. Adam says the reviews are still coming in, but I think it was popular enough we'll brew a full 15 barrels of it in the future. Well, that's excellent, Adam. Congratulations to you and everybody up at Twin Span in Davenport, and continued success with your opening in these weird times. There's another opening going on. Our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave at High Gravity in Tulsa and Pippin's Tap Room have decided to reopen their doors to customers this Friday. They've been doing, you know, delivery and curbside. They're asking for the safety of everyone who works there at the store that you do wear a mask, if at all possible. They're still doing curbside pickup for those who are more comfortable with that. More details can be found on High Gravity's Facebook page. And for the rest of us not in the Tulsa area, of course, highgravitybrew.com is always open. And when you go to highgravitybrew.com, you can check out the excellent Build Your Own Beer page, where a whole well-stocked homebrew store's worth of stuff is ready for the picking. The variety of ingredients on hand is astounding, and as you add stuff to your cart, your total remains visible at the bottom of the page, so you can keep track of stuff. And if you're able to upgrade your gear and have more time to brew nowadays, why don't you treat yourself with a new electric brewing system from highgravitybrew.com. They've got their own Warthog brand of controllers and turnkey systems, as well as other brands, too, from 5 gallons to 2 barrels in single, 2 and 3 vessel configurations. HighGravityBrew.com will take the pain out of propane. And if you use the code EBC75BB, that's EBC75BB, you'll get $75 off your electric gear purchase. And when you use that code, you let Desiree and Dave know where you heard about them. We love Desiree and Dave and the rest of the High Gravity family. Check them out at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Okay, a few weeks ago, I did a live happy hour Facebook chat with Kevin Welch up at Boom Island Brewing, whom you've heard on this show. Kevin brought up the topic of the iodophore episode that I did with Merle Landman of National Chemicals. I gave that show a re-listen, and Merle mentioned what he called the 7 principles of cleaning. And so I contacted Merle, and he put me in touch with Jonathan Etley, who has an updated set of cleaning principles to talk about. Jonathan Etley, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hello. Pleasure to be here.
Now, you've got some big shoes to fill because your boss, Merle Landman of National Chemicals, he came on the show 13 years ago. And that episode, talking about iodophore and sanitization, is one of, if not the most downloaded shows of this podcast. So, you know, like I say, you've got some big shoes to fill.
Let's set another record.
There's a little rivalry now, an unofficial rivalry. Now, what's your role there at National?
My official job title is Key Accounts Manager for Brewing and Beverage Systems. I manage 2 areas of business for National Chemicals. I manage our cleaning and sanitation business for home and craft brewing, and also for commercial beverage system cleaning applications.
And Merle passed the baton to you because I was listening to the show that we did you know, so long ago, and man, it holds up. It was really a good bunch of information there, and I would recommend if listeners haven't heard it that they should go out into the archives and find that. During that conversation, Merle referenced what he called the seven principles of cleaning. And so I emailed Merle here a few days ago and saying, hey, you want to come on and talk about that? Because we never really covered it. And so you've come on today to talk about sort of an updated version of that seven principles of cleaning, because you've got to be stuff's got to be clean before it can be sanitized, right?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, there's an old saying in the homebrew world that you can't sanitize dirt. So you do have to pay good attention to your cleaning principles as well.
I've heard dirt substituted with other words, but
yeah, there's a number of proper and improper words for that. But, you know, soil load, biomass, dirt, sludge, debris, trub, all that good stuff, all work.
And this is a family show, so we won't go too far down the road.
Yes.
But I guess the first question I want to ask is, you know, of course, we're in the midst of all this COVID-19, you know, coronavirus pandemic, and people are concerned about cleaning and sanitizing. Can homebrew level sanitization products, are they effective in killing the virus? Let's just start there.
That's an excellent question. And, you know, one thing that, you know, our particular listening market here with homebrewers, I always like to think that people that are brewing or making wine for a hobby have very good habits already on understanding the concepts of cleaning and sanitizing. I think people that are active in the hobby understand how to sanitize things, what needs to be sanitized, and that gives them a pretty good leg up on how to handle those things around their homes. And in particular, I think it's a level of safety that's really important to be paying attention to right now in the age of this virus, however long this happens to last. Now, one thing in general, when you have products that are considered antimicrobial, whether they're sanitize or disinfect, they are two distinct things. Those products are all regulated by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. The EPA guides and regulates how a product can be used, what it can be used on, what applications it can be used for, and sometimes down to the detail level of what it can specifically kill and how. We make a variety of antimicrobial sanitize and disinfect products here at National Chemicals. Some are based on chlorine, some are based on iodine, and some are based on quaternary ammonia, or QA for short. Our most common homebrew sanitizing and brewing sanitizing product is the BTF iodophore. BTF iodophore meets the general guidelines to be classified as a sanitizer with the EPA, and that means it will kill a couple standard cultures in 5 minutes or less to 99.9%. However, there are no specific disinfect or antiviral or antibacterial claims for specific cultures of BTF iodophore, even though iodine has been shown to kill a wide variety of viruses. We don't specifically with our product have specific guidance that it can be capable to kill this current human coronavirus that's out there. Now, on the other side of the coin, we do manufacture a product that does meet those guidelines, and that's the QA quaternary ammonia concentrated disinfectant and sanitizer. Our QA concentrate has received CDC and EPA guidance to disinfect hard non-porous surfaces and kill a wide variety of viruses, including human coronavirus, and by extension, these governmental bodies have allowed us to say that our QA product is effective on hard, non-porous surfaces at disinfect strength to kill this coronavirus. Now, the only downside is that QA is not a sanitized product for brewing-specific equipment. It's a wonderful product to have in your home or your business or your restaurant or your brewery, to disinfect a variety of hard non-porous surfaces like stainless steel, glass, plastics, flooring, etc. I have been using it in my home when I work in the kitchen, say with raw meat, just to sanitize my equipment. But now I'm using it at disinfect strength to spray around my house with a spray bottle, like my kitchen counters, my kitchen faucet handles, coffee tables, doorknobs, high traffic areas, refrigerator handles. And it's a product that's being picked up by a number of homebrew retailers in the industry right now, and it's pretty readily available if you're shopping for homebrew supplies.
But what effect would it have if you used this product on your brewing equipment?
The worst downside is that Quat is what's known as a cationic detergent, and it's got a positive charge to it. And one of the downsides to that is specifically in glassware, it leaves a residual film behind after it dries, which is great on hard, non-porous surfaces because it has a long-lasting antimicrobial action. But it is a drawback on sanitizing brewing equipment and glassware. That film that it leaves behind destroys foam and head retentive properties in beer. So it's not something that would harm you physically or otherwise. It's more so a negative downside on the beer you're trying to make.
So better for your doorknobs and not necessarily for your draft equipment.
Correct. Yep. just like any number of things, there's different tools to do different jobs. You know, I wouldn't necessarily spray down my household with BTF iodophore for a variety of reasons. Just like I wouldn't necessarily sanitize my beer glassware or carboys with QA. There's different tools for different jobs.
Well, the good news I hear is that just plain soap is good at breaking down the cell structure of the virus. And, you know, sort of that's why washing your hands for 20 minutes or 20 minutes. It feels like 20 minutes for 20
it
seconds.
That's
enough to do the job on your hands. So I guess if you follow these principles that we're going to talk about, then you should be OK.
Yeah. The reason why hand washing is so effective on your hands is generally soaps are fatty acid driven. And the virus, in particular, the coronavirus has a fatty acid sheath. And so likes dissolve likes, and soap is excellent at breaking down the outer sheath of the virus. And that's why it's the best first line of defense is hand washing for this, this virus that we're dealing with right now.
So let's talk about, and these principles of cleaning can be useful for, you know, like you said, cleaning your you know, meat, your counter after you've had raw meat, to brewing, you know, beer and making sure that you don't get cross-contamination from one batch to another. So, you know, these principles are well used in many areas of life.
Yes, yes. And like a number of other things, it comes with a handy acronym. Merle previously mentioned the seven principles of cleaning. There's now kind of an eight-faceted concept that's out there. It's called TACT WINS, T-A-C-T WINS, W-I-N-S. And broken down, those all stand for time, action, concentration, temperature, water, individual, nature, and surface. And this guidance comes from the food processing industry, where naturally cleanliness and sanitizing are paramount to protect our food supply chain.
So we can break down this acronym letter by letter and kind of explore this concept a chunk at a time. And speaking of time, the first letter is T for time.
So in time, in this instance, a lot of it, the time reference is how much time it takes to clean the surface. Time can also be applied to contact time for sanitizing and disinfecting as well. Time refers to how long it takes to clean a surface, whether it's a couple minutes or 30 minutes or an hour or an overnight soak. It also refers to how quickly you want to clean a surface. I mean, I know some brewers that tend to leave their mash tun for a couple of days and not clean it out. You know, in that situation, time is working against you because you're actually making a bigger job for yourself than cleaning something in a timely fashion right after you get it dirty. So that's a variety of considerations for the time component there.
Yeah, I was I worked in for a giant food company once upon a time, a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, it seems like. And I was sitting in on a presentation from the QA lab, and they were talking about the effectiveness of just cleaning hands. And so that what they did was they swabbed a hand that hadn't been washed in a while, you know, a few hours. And they, you know, streak that on a Petri dish. And then they did just, you know, what would be a cursory, just a rinse, you know, of your hands just as you're leaving the bathroom and you're in a hurry. And they streaked that hand. And then they did another one that was with, you know, thorough hand washing techniques that take a little extra time. And it was amazing the difference of the growth cultures on those Petri dishes. You know, even if you wash your hands just for a little bit, it does make a difference, but it doesn't make as big a difference as if you did a thorough, you know, hand washing technique. So that amazed me.
It is amazing, isn't it? And one thing I always like to reference, I've always been a huge fan of the guys at MythBusters. I know they did a couple of good episodes on hand washing and germ transmission and how sneezing and virus particles and germs transmit through air and human-to-human contact. Those are great things to look up and watch, especially as we consider the concept of social distancing and isolating right now as we're dealing with this virus that's out there.
Yeah, after you watch that episode, you'll be wanting to be 16 feet instead of 6 feet away from everybody else.
No kidding. Yep.
So the next letter is A for action.
A is action, and in homebrew cleaning, a lot of that refers to mechanical action. You know, you've got a cleaner, but in combination with the cleaner, what makes the process effective is action. Different types of action are, you know, scrubbing with a non-aggressive scrubby pad, or a carboy brush, or a bottle brush, or using a recirculating keg washer or carboy washer system. Those are all different methods of action to get the cleaner in contact with the soil load to disperse it as rapidly as possible.
And it's the same principle with washing your hands. You see the directions, you know, online of how you're supposed to move your fingers all over the hands and, you know, wash your thumbs and your fingertips and all, you know, you've got to actually create some action on those surfaces. And just like you said, with a bottle brush or, you know, a brush, if you clean a carboy and just slosh the water around, I've done, you know, I used to do that in the past, and then I would hold the carboy up to the light and see that it was, it wasn't nearly as clean as I thought it was, you know, and then I had to go back and wash with the brush and actually get some physical action to scrub those particles off.
Yep. And, you know, and going back to the first concept in time, you know, with a lack of action, your cleaning takes a lot more time. When you're dealing in a professional environment, you don't have all day and overnight to wait. I mean, sometimes I pull the easy button and just do an overnight soak with a cleaner, one of our Craftmeister products, and kind of set it and forget it, come back to it in a day. And this, the lack of action takes a lot more time. But if you're looking to get something done in a timely fashion, the appropriate amount of mechanical action gets the job done for you.
The next letter is C for concentration.
Yep. And concentration can refer both to your cleaning agent and also your sanitizing agent. Now, our Craftmeister cleaning products on the powder side come with a scoop to help you measure the product out. Our suggested concentration is 2 scoops per gallon of water for both the oxygen and alkaline brewery wash products. That's our recommended concentration for timely cleaning. And on sanitizing, you always have instructions for, you know, certain parts per million concentration for either sanitizing or disinfecting. And in particular with sanitizing and disinfecting products, it's critical to follow the concentration information so you don't overshoot or undershoot your concentration to get the job. Now, concentration on cleaning products can be a little more fungible. I mean, you can certainly drive more cleaner into solution to get a more rapid action, but that may always be the most cost-efficient way to use products in your time. So that's why I always suggest following manufacturer's instructions on cleaning and sanitizing products, because generally we've done a lot of work to figure out what a good usage rate is. And in particular on antimicrobial products were regulated to be used at a certain concentration.
Now, back in the discussion with Merle 13 years ago, we talked about, you know, iodophore and the practice that I witnessed back in those days of people just doing a few glugs of iodophore solution into, you know, a carboy full of water and thinking that, you know, more sanitizing solution is better. But, you know, Merle told us that, no, more sanitizing solution will actually is detrimental, because then you have a rinse situation where you have to rinse afterwards. Is more
correct?
Is more cleaning chemical, is it as detrimental as more sanitizer?
I mean, there's a couple of ways to look at that. I mean, the more cleaner you use, the more active agent you've got in solution, the faster it will work. But the downside to that is the stronger you make a cleaning solution, the more you have to rinse it because there's more cleaner on the surfaces that you're contacting. Those higher concentrations can potentially cause skin irritation, not burning, but irritation. And they'll affect your pocketbook, too. I mean, if your cleaner is supposed to be used at 1 ounce per gallon, you're using at 8 ounces per gallon. That's good for me as the manufacturer, but it may not be good for you as someone that needs to keep their cleaner in stock at home.
Well, in the long run, it might not be good for you, because if they use too much and have a bad experience with it, then they might blame the chemical instead of themselves.
Correct. And that's usually the way these things work. I mean, sanitizers are not like duct tape where, you know, if a couple inches is good, a couple feet is better. My grandpa, a former Marine, always used to act that way. You know, if a couple wraps of duct tape is good, then 8 or 20 are even better. Unfortunately, that's not the way sanitizers work, because you deal with situations where you have to chase your tail and rinse with potable water after an overuse situation to avoid excessive concentrations on the surfaces that you're dealing with.
The next letter is T for temperature.
And obviously temperature can refer to a number of things. There's temperature situations with cleaning products. In general, across the board, cleaning is faster with hotter water. Hotter water dissolves solids, in particular fatty materials and greases. We make two powdered cleaners under the Kraftmeister brand name. One is the alkaline brewery wash. The other is our oxygen brewery wash. Now, temperature is a factor for both of these products. With oxygen-based products, which have sodium percarbonate in them, which is the oxygen release chemical, basically dry peroxide, that's the dry format cleaner that makes that effervescent foaming oxygen, which is good at creating its own mechanical action and deodorizing, and it's got a number of benefits. But it needs to be used at warm temperatures, at roughly 100 to 120 degrees, in order to dissolve that chemical. So temperature is a constraint with the oxygen cleaners. Now, our alkaline brewery wash does not feature any of that oxygen release chemistry, that sodium percarbonate, so it can be used at a wide variety of temperatures. It can be used in ice-cold water. It can be used in really hot water, up to 140 degrees. You know, sometimes it's nice to be in a situation where you may not have ready supply of really hot water to clean with, and know you've got a cleaner that can be active in cold water. Now, based on some of these other principles, if you reduce the temperature, you may need to increase other areas like concentration or action in order to get the same results. But it's nice to be able to have a product that works in cold and hot water. Now, temperature is also a factor for sanitizing agents. BTF iodophore is designed to work in cool to lukewarm water. The reason being, iodine is in the halogen family on the periodic table. Halogens are naturally gases, such as iodine and chlorine. When you get halogen-based sanitizers into aqueous solution, they're usually pushed in there with a variety of compounds and delivery mechanisms to get basically a gas into a liquid solution. Now, over time, iodine and halogen-based sanitizers will slowly return back to the atmosphere. You know, if you mix a solution of iodophore within 24 to 48 hours, the color of you mix it into will go from that nice amber color, likely back to clear water. That's because all the iodine released back into the atmosphere. Hmm. If you mix iodophore into really hot water, that process is greatly accelerated and your solution doesn't last that long. So that's why we always put instructions to mix iodophore into cool to lukewarm water. So that's another area where temperature is a concern.
And that locks back into the concept of time as well. So you
correct.
you got to use your properly mixed chemical at the proper temperature in the proper time, or it's not going to be as effective.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you're absolutely right.
And there are also some safety issues, obviously, with temperature. If you get your temperature of your cleaning solution too hot, you could scald yourself, or you could possibly, say, break a glass carboy, which is not good either. So, you know, those are more common sense
yep.
things.
Yes, and it's all under the area of temperature. I mean, for instance, when cleaning beer lines, you don't want to have a solution that's too hot, especially when you're dealing with commercial-grade beer line tubing, these barrier-coated tubings. If you run a beer line cleaning solution that's too hot, you can actually delaminate and warp out the barrier tubing or, you know, disfigure in pressure situations beer line tubing and greatly damage a draft system. And that's another area where temperature is certainly a concern, too.
Speaking of draft lines, this kind of goes back into some of the previous content. It had been a while since I had cleaned the dip tube of one of my kegs, and I'd noticed that the vinyl hose, it had been a while since I changed that keg out. And so the vinyl hose, you know, had some sort of deposits, you know, of either hop debris or protein or something in there. And so I used some of your brewery line cleaner. And I was amazed. I mixed up a little bit of it and put it in the keg and then filled the dip tube and the line to the tap with the cleaning solution, let it sit for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And then came back and pushed the button again, and boy, the junk that came out of the I thought my stuff was clean.
Yeah, our BLC really does a number, the reason being is that that's a very powerful clean. Unlike some of the powder cleaners I was just talking about, BLC, beverage system cleaner, is actually an alkaline caustic base. That's potassium hydroxide. That's the reason why it's so incredibly effective at cleaning beverage systems, because caustics are incredibly effective cleaners. They're not terribly safe, but they're very effective. And it's amazing the difference you would notice if you cleaned your beer lines with our non-caustic alkaline powder like Alkaline Brewery Wash, but then did another cleaning cycle with BLC, you would notice a tremendous difference in the amount of material and junk that gets pushed out of that system.
Hmm. Yeah, I just went through and, you know, squirted a bit, you know, to purge the line and waited another 10 minutes and then, you know, just repeated that process until the fluid ran clear. But, you know, that's a step that I've added. Every time I change out my kegs now, you know, I do a little purging of a little bit, you know, and it just takes like a quart of the solution to do it. But
yeah,
you know,
it doesn't take much. And I think that's a good practice. I mean, in the commercial world, the best guidance is beverage systems should be cleaned every 2 weeks or 14 days, twice a month, whatever it breaks down to. For the homebrew world, I mean, you're really on your own. I mean, the cleaner your system, the cleaner your draft lines, the better your beer is going to taste. Mm-hmm. And so the better job you do of it, the better your beer is going to taste. But I know a lot of people that has a good rule of thumb that every time they kick a keg, they'll go through and clean their beer lines, whether it's the one that's being transitioned into or their entire system. And that can vary from how active every individual is from drinking out of their system. So But I think a good rule of thumb is you should think about cleaning your beer lines every other week, if not once a month, if you're drinking pretty frequently out of a homemade kegerator.
The next letter is W for water.
Water is everywhere. I mean, water is considered the universal solvent. All cleaning agents are dissolved in water. All sanitizing agents are dissolved in water. Water itself is used as the first step in the cleaning process to pre-rinse all your dirty equipment. There's the classic three-stage wash, rinse, and sanitize. I also like to throw a fourth in there, the pre-rinse. Whenever you clean let's say you're transferring a beer from a primary to a secondary fermenter, and you've got all that yeast cake on the bottom of your primary, housing ring on the top of it. I don't know a lot of people that just go ahead and dump a bunch of water and cleaner in that without rinsing out a bunch of the crud that's in there. That's pre-rinse with water before you start applying your cleaner. Now, there are surfactant agents in cleaners. The way to think of surfactants is that they make the water wetter in attaching to the soil load, basically. No cleaner can be effectively delivered without the water. There's other conditions to consider with your water, whether it's hard water, whether it's soft water, it's hot water or cold water, and also potentially the pH of the water that you're dealing with. Water does a number of interesting things. I mean, you can have non-filtered municipal tap water, you can have well water, you can have reverse osmosis water, filtered water, deionized water, distilled water, just because water is a solvent, it dissolves a number of other secondary chemicals and ions and compounds. Now, one thing I think that goes under the radar is your water quality and its interaction with your cleaner. Anyone that's cleaned homebrew equipment with OxyClean or its generic derivatives laundry detergent may notice a conspicuous white hazy film left behind on equipment. One reason for that is that, those are supposed to be for laundry, not necessarily for brewing equipment. But also, when you dissolve sodium percarbonate in water, you create free carbonate ions. Free carbonate ions can bind up with metal ions such as calcium or magnesium and precipitate a chalky film on the inside of your gear. Now, for brewing equipment, that's definitely not something you want to have happen because you're creating a secondary soil load that can harbor microbes if not effectively removed. So with our oxygen cleaners, and this goes for our oxygen brewery wash or our tablet-based products, we actually blend in what are called sequestration agents into our oxygen release chemistry that basically trap that hard water scale in the water as opposed to leaving it on the inside of your gear so that you have a free rinsing surface that's ready to be sanitized, basically. And we also talked about water temperature for sanitizers. One thing, water hardness and pH can affect how your sanitizer handles. Acid-based sanitizers that require low pH may or may not be effective in alkaline pH water or high hardness water because of the acid delivery mechanism. BTF iodophore. National Chemicals is based in the Winona, Minnesota area, right on the Mississippi River. It's an area loaded with calcium carbonate from all the areas surrounding the Mississippi River. It's a very hard water area. The nice thing about iodophore is it is friendly in both soft water and hard water because it doesn't require an acid pH to be effective. There are certain limitations to that. We've run into situations where people have really alkaline pH municipal waters, and it's pretty rare. If you get into a situation where the tap water you're pulling has pH over 9, you may have some problems mixing a stable iodophore solution. And in those situations, you should turn to a filtered or deionized water or reverse osmosis water to get a stable sanitizer solution. So water drives the whole process.
And you referred to this earlier in, you know, when you delay cleaning your equipment, it's going to cost you time later on. It's my practice, as soon as I use a vinyl hose, or as soon as I use like an auto siphon, or as soon as I, you know, pour a beer out of a bottle or a growler, I will rinse with hot water immediately to get, you know, to get the soil load, as you say, out, you know, while it's still easily dissolvable. And if you, mm-hmm. you know, you let a hose sit around for a day, sometimes you might as well just throw that hose away because it's just, there's just so much gunk in there. But in using hot water or using water, you know, immediately, you can save yourself a lot of work later on.
Yeah, doing that pre-rinse immediately, I think, is a great tactic. I also used to be a professional cook for a decade before I worked into the homebrew industry. And, you know, I've gone through safe food handling and training. And whenever I cook, or used to cook professionally, and I also cook at home now, it's much, much easier to clean your mess immediately as you go, mm-hmm. As opposed to letting it sit there for a day or a two or a week. You know, how much of a drag it is on your if you didn't clean out your mash tun last time or your kettle last time, or you want a keg of beer and your kegs are all dirty, and you got to go through and do all that work just to do the job that you want to do to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think timely cleaning, with either a pre-rinse or cleaning right away, stuff is so much easier to clean right away. And if you can't do it, how many times, as homebrewers said, you had that buddy that shows up with a trunk full of old beer bottles.
Oh yeah.
Nothing's ever been rinsed and they're all full of Petri dish looking mold
and cigarette
all
butts,
kinds of crazy stuff and cigarette butts and whatever it happens to be, where a couple minutes of pre-rinsing could have made your life a lot easier. I've actually had a couple of situations where I've just thrown those bottles out because I didn't want to waste all my time trying to clean them before I could rehab them. The pre-rinse immediately is just a solid technique.
Which may lead us into the next letter, which is I for individual.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one to think of for home brewing in particular. I mean, the way to think about individual is who will be doing the cleaning. You know, when you're dealing with a large-scale food processing plant, you generally have specific people that handle cleaning, whether it's the CIP cleaning or the janitorial staff. You have staffs and jobs, and everyone has a task, basically. Now, when you're a home brewer, that individual is generally you, unless you're brewing in a group. If you brew in a three-person team, maybe you have one person assigned to a specific task on a regular basis. That's pretty much what that refers to. That one's hard to translate down to the home level from the professional level, but it's basically who's doing the job.
I like to say, if you like washing dishes, you'll love home brewing.
That's right.
In for nature.
Yeah, nature, I mean, in these pandemic days, nature is your friend to get outside and getting out and about. But for cleaning, nature specifically refers to the nature of the soil. You know, there's a variety of different soil loads in the food processing world, some of which translate down to brewing. There's fats and greases. There's proteins. There's mineral buildup. There's sugars. Complex carbohydrates. With the exception of fats and greases, all those are present in brewing. You've got proteins, water scale minerals, simple and caramelized sugars, complex carbohydrates. All that stuff comes from the brewing process, from spent yeast, from grain, from fermentation, from wort. It's the nature of the soil load, basically. Determining the nature of the soil load determines what kind of cleaner you want to use. Now, in general, alkaline pH cleaners are the tool of choice for breaking down and removing organic soil that's based on protein and sugar and carbohydrates. That's the vast majority of brewing soils. But you also have water scale problems. I mean, if you ended up one of those situations where you used OxyClean and you have all this mineral scale on the inside of your carboy, this chalk deposit, that's a situation where an alkaline cleaner won't help you because that's an alkaline pH water salt deposit.
Hmm.
You need to turn to a strong acid to dissolve that. Sometimes in draft systems or in the boil process, you can develop beer stone. Beer stone is calcium oxalate, which is an alkaline pH mineral salt that needs to be broken down and dissolved with a strong acid. It also precipitates out in draft systems, which is why acid cleanings on a regular basis are required. So knowing what you're cleaning, the nature of the soil, helps you figure out what type of cleaner and how to attack it.
The right tool for the right job.
Exactly. Yep.
The final letter is S for surface.
Yeah, and in the cleaning world, what's the type of equipment that you're cleaning? Is it stainless steel? Is it plastic? Is it rubber? Is it vinyl? Is it glass? Is it aluminum? Knowing the type of surface that you're using or cleaning, I should say, helps you figure out how to clean. And there are some cleaners that can be damaging to certain surfaces. For instance, you don't want to use strong acids or strong alkaline caustics on aluminum because you can dissolve and pit them. Mm. You don't want to use bleach on stainless steel because you can rust and pit out the stainless steel. And, you know, over time and high concentrations, you can potentially case harden and microfracture tubing with alkaline cleaners. So knowing what type of surface you're cleaning and the chemicals you're using on it are an important consideration.
And the physical device that you use is too. If you used a stainless steel scrubby on your plastic brew pail, that probably wouldn't be good either.
That's correct. That's why I always like to recommend the non-abrasive scrubby pads if you're going to use something like that. I mean, if you're going to clean out a food-grade plastic bucket, a nice soft wash rag that won't scratch the surface is much preferred. Yep. You know, if you make deep scratches and gouges in your plastic carboys or buckets, those are areas that are ripe for bacterial and other contamination.
You're saying wash rag. That's I thought that was just a Southern thing.
Washcloth, towel, microfiber cloth, wash rag, the old rag on a stick, you know, one of those kinds of things.
This is a complete side story, but when my family and I were traveling to Los Angeles one time back in the mid-70s, Dad, you know, we needed washcloths for the room, and Dad asked at the desk for some wash rags for the room, and they were like, "Well, why do you need rags for your room?"
No, I get it. I'm from born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it's one of the few areas in the country where we ask, "Where's the bubbler?"
Oh. Is that a water fountain?
I don't know.
Is that a water
exactly
fountain?
Exactly, the drink. The water fountain for drinking. For some reason, very locally in the Milwaukee area or around Wisconsin, we say bubbler sometimes, and no one knows what you're talking about otherwise.
I'm shocked. I don't know how I knew that, but you know, it's a. I don't know the quadratic formula, but I know what a bubbler is. So
I'm surprised a lot of people don't. They hear that and they're like, "What are you talking about?"
Well, listen, I think there's a ton of information that we've covered, you know, it's in some ways it's common sense, but then in other ways it's not, because if you're just used to doing things one way and you don't think about it, you may be doing it the wrong way.
Yeah, and it's one thing I always encourage. I deal very specifically with sanitization, cleaning and sanitizing. You know, obviously, I understand all the facets of the brewing and winemaking process because I've been in the hobby for so long. But, you know, I think it's important to not only when you get started, but also throughout your brewing career to sit down and think about your cleaning procedures, how they're working for you, what's working, what's not working. Are the products you're using working for you? Are they not working for you? Are your sanitizers working the way you think they are and the applications you're using them in? You know, I'm always an advocate for trying different products, trying different procedures and practices, and settling on a routine that works for you. I like having a structure and a process that's repeatable for cleaning and sanitizing my gear, because once I've got a good routine down, it minimizes my chances of screwing it up and making mistakes. And I think that repeatable process improves your consistency. And consistency is the main reason why you do such a hard work and job of cleaning and it improves the consistency of your fermented products, whether it's beer, wine, or mead, or otherwise.
Well said. Well, Jonathan, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate Merle passing the baton to you. Now the counter starts rolling, and you know, you've got a lot of catching up to do to get to his numbers, but we'll see what we can do.
I certainly do. Yep. No, and Merle has done, and the Landman family, between Merle and his dad, have done a number of great things for the brewing industry, whether it's development of beer line cleaners, high-quality sanitizers, cleaning agents, detergents and sanitizers for beer glassware. I like to think that we've got solutions for every step of the process, from fermentation equipment to brewing equipment to keeping the draft system clean to keeping beer glassware clean. And there's something to appreciate along every step of the process. And it just makes me want to get back out in the world and hopefully get back to a normal situation where we can all get together and have a pint again.
Cheers to that. You're here.
Cheers.
Thanks, Jonathan.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks again to Jonathan, National Chemicals, and to Merle for getting us together to chat. Lots of good information. I hope you find it as useful as I did. And if you want to email Jonathan, you can use experts@craftmeister.com. That's experts@craftmeister.com. Or you can go to nationalchemicals.com/craftmeister. Or you could just email me and I'll pass on the information to Jonathan. If you have any other brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies always coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.